We welcome you to Press Row, a TxAgs produced podcast with local media, and it's episode number 2 of the 2020 Aggie football edition of the program as Texas A&M gets set to open up the season against the Vanderbilt Commodores this Saturday, 6:30 kick at Kyle Field on the SEC Network alternate channel. Press Row and all TxAgs podcasts can be found on TxAgs.com/podcast. The entire family of podcasts at TxAgs or iTunes or however you access podcasts. I'm Gabe Bach, joined today by Olin Buchanan of TxAgs, Travis Brown of the Bryan College Station Eagle, Mike Lucas of KAGS TV, and Brent Zwerneman of the Houston Chronicle. Got two words for you, boys. Happy game week. I'm throwing game week in there as one word, but we've made it. We've got to this point as we're recording today on a Tuesday, 4 days away from kick. So, hey, look. This is the lifeblood of all of us who do this. We need football. And the people who read us and the people who watch us and listen to us, they need it every bit as much as we do. So you can tell I'm a little fired up. I'm sure you guys are too.
I think at one point I had predicted about a 40% chance of this happening, and I felt like I was being optimistic at this point. So I think a lot of people have done the right things, and it seems like it's headed in the right direction. And you know, it's one of those things where you can control yourself. You can't always control what the other side is doing. So sometimes that's can be out of your control. But hopefully Vanderbilt will have things squared away and there'll be a game to watch Saturday night.
I'm looking forward to it. Of course, I don't think you can take anything for granted until they actually line up and kick off, as our friends in Waco learned last week.
Yeah, it was a roller coaster of a summer trying to figure out if we were going to play, if we weren't going to play, what was going to happen. I was mostly optimistic, but now, I mean, I think there's little way that anything, you know, hugely catastrophic happens moving forward here. And you might miss a game or two, but I think we're doing this thing.
Travis, you just jinxed it. Come on.
Famous last words.
Can't do that. All I will say this, though. It has been the longest offseason ever, and we have looked at every storyline possible time after time. Again, we've changed our own opinions on things that we would have been confident in. And I am just so excited that come Saturday, we can start using new footage on TV and not those same 7 clips we get from A&M every other week. So that is what I'm most excited about as we get ready for Vanderbilt.
With all due respect, yes.
Yeah, he makes a pretty good point on changing your own opinions, because there has been so much time to really think about this and rethink. But also, the storylines changed by the hour. Or, you know, two big things could happen every single day that might – get you to think of your opinion differently within the conference you're talking about or the entire college landscape or specific to Texas A&M. Last week on this podcast, we spent a lot of time right off the top reacting to no Jamon Osmond. And then, guys, yesterday at the press conference, all the players called it a shocker that Anthony Hines had really had opted out. So I guess we'll start with the big story that came out a couple days ago, 6 days before the start of the season. Let's go around the horn here. Olin, we'll start with you and kind of just break it down after that. But your take on Anthony Hines quitting 6 days before the season started.
Yeah, I thought that was very curious, the timing. You know, if you say I'm going to sit out because I'm concerned about the COVID pandemic, I understand now he lost somebody in his family, though. But if you say it's the COVID pandemic, or it's because of, you know, some kind of social unrest. Well, those have been issues that have been happening for and in the news for several months. So I do find it odd that it was became an issue, you know, 1 week before the kickoff. Now, if he wanted to say, well, I had lost somebody in my family and that made me rethink my priorities, okay, I can understand that. I can certainly sympathize. I still think the timing was odd and questionable. That said, I think those that get too upset and angry about it are just expelling some useless energy. Next guy up, nothing's going to change. And I think A&M has some pretty good candidates to step into that position.
First, I want to say, I think Jimbo has handled it the right way. It puts him in a tough position because we all know he's a tough coach and he doesn't like a lot of excuses and things like that. But he's handled it in the sense of saying, hey, I don't know what all's going on in his mind. You know, what's going on the home front and all those things. And as Olin said, next man up. So it was interesting to me that Anthony Hines was a guy who came and saw us not once, but twice during the media availability. When we haven't gotten some guys once, he came twice with the idea that he was going to be a team leader on that defense, and suddenly he's gone. So perplexing. I liked how Anaya Smith was just straight up honest. He said, frankly, I was shocked that happened, you know, less than a week to kickoff. But I do think the players and Coach Fisher took the right approach in saying, hey, we all don't know what's going on in this young man's world, because I'm not sure I could have handled it that well.
Hey, do we know when – I think it was an aunt, or do we know when whatever family member it was, do we know when this family member actually passed? Did it happen like this, like in the last
– He said days? 3 weeks ago in his – he said 3 weeks ago in his Twitter
so
post.
So 3 weeks ago. Okay.
That's it. My biggest takeaway is I'm not in his shoes. I don't know how he's feeling, and an event like losing a family member can obviously change your entire outlook and perspective on a situation. So I think we just have to sit back, respect his decision. There's no point in crying over it now. It's not going to change. He opted out of the season. And like Olin said, they got some talented linebackers in that room that, you know, this may be an opportunity for them to get playing time earlier than expected. And they're all four-star recruits for the most part. I think Jimbo said it yesterday. We like the talent in that room. Now just a matter of, can that talent produce on Saturday? So respect the decision. The timing's definitely a little odd, but next man up, and you got to move forward with what you got.
Here's the interesting thing about what we heard from some of Anthony Hines' teammates and Jamon's teammates yesterday. Jamon comes on and he says that he's going to skip the season to focus on the draft. Anthony Hines says he had a family member who died of COVID. He wants to focus on social injustice issues as well while he's away from the field. But the one thing that was one of the first words that both Buddy Johnson and Kellen Mond said about those two teammates is mental health. They want to make sure that their mental health is steady. And it's something that A&M has put a large emphasis on. They have two sports psychologists on staff. I believe there was rumors that they're going to be hiring another one here soon. It's been a heavy push through this pandemic, as all of us sitting around at home, not knowing how to do, the focus on mental health has been huge. And as someone who has talked to sports psychologists, you know, things like green light thoughts, which is, it, maybe for a baseball player, you don't get into the batter's box until your head is full of like, I'm going to crush this ball. I'm going to hit this over the fence. I'm going to do my job. Not like, oh no, I don't know. Is he going to throw a curveball? If you're tentative, don't get into the box. And so it maybe with some of these guys, they really tried to fight through whatever mental hurdle they're going through and just couldn't do it, and knew that they couldn't necessarily get out there because they didn't have those green light thoughts. And so if you're going to get another year of eligibility, why not? If you think that maybe mentally you're not going to be up to par with maybe the next guy up, maybe it is actually a team, being a team player and taking yourself out of the equation. Now, I know a lot of people, the old school football thought and vibe is going to be suck it up, get mentally tough, but that's not necessarily the focus maybe anymore when you get more focus on mental health. And if you can't necessarily go out there and overcome those roadblocks now, maybe figure out and sort through the issues that you have and what's going on, and use this year to be able to do that and come back more mentally strong next season.
Well said.
Nobody used more baseball analogies than I do, but Travis Brown takes the cake. That's good. But I like that.
All right, here's the deal. I tell my boys, I say, you have one opportunity to be a great athlete, and that's when you're young. That's not happening for you. That's not happening for me anymore. It happens when you're young. I had a nephew a decade or so ago going into a senior year of high school basketball, a good basketball player, didn't really care for the coach. He told me he was going to quit. I said, if you quit this team, 20 years from now, you're going to remember that you quit this team going into your senior season of high school basketball. When you're 80 years old, sitting on a porch in your rocking chair, if you're fortunate to live that long, you're going to remember you quit that team. You know, I tried to give him that speech, and I feel like, and obviously these guys have thought this through, you would at least think so, but I feel like they need to take all that into consideration. You're only young once, and when you're young, that's when you're at your best as an athlete. And get to do things that other people don't get to do.
What he didn't say just now is that he told his nephew, if you quit this team, you're going to tell your grandkids you quit a team that Jimmy Butler was on.
Different nephew, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was funny at Tomball High School. My nephew was the one getting some attention. Good player. Went to Don Lucas camp. Don Lucas loved him. They had this raw kid named Jimmy Butler. I kind of caught my eyes. Kyle said, yeah, he's coming along. I think he's come along okay. Meanwhile, Kyle went to A&M and got his business degree in 3.5 years.
You know, I don't mean
On a related note, I did a little feature on Anais Smith last week and talked to his dad. And his dad said Anais was a really great baseball player going through about middle school and really liked baseball up until that point. And he was actually also in band and was a really good trumpet player, he said. And he said finally something just kind of clicked with Anais that he wanted to focus in on baseball. He didn't want to play baseball anymore. And Anais's father said he made him go up to the coach, Anais, and tell him, hey, I want to focus on baseball. I want to focus on football. I'm not doing baseball anymore. And he made him take that responsibility for it. And he focused on football and here he is now. So that there is, whatever you want to call the mentality, there is some of that mentality on the team too, per anecdotal reference. But yeah, it's a real interesting thing to look at.
Well, Owen, what were you going to say?
Probably something that'd get me in a lot of trouble.
Okay.
I'll just say that if you were going to opt out, because I would respect it a lot more if you said, I'm opting out because I'm concerned about the social issues and I want to put more energy toward that. Or, yeah, I lost someone from COVID and I just don't think it's safe to me. Or I want to be I want to get ready for the draft, because that happens a lot. If the excuse now becomes, well, and I don't want to downplay mental health issues, because we've seen it here. A guy several years ago had some obvious mental health issues. But when that comes to, if it comes to the point where we're saying, look, you know, I just don't know that I can for whatever reason, am in the mental state aligned to really play at a high level. So I'm going to sit out. To me, you already made your mistake as a coach by not recruiting guys who are more mentally tougher than that. I think, you got to find some guys that are mentally tough. And I think there's still something to be said for athletes and people that are tough enough to work through difficult times too.
Can I say something from a practical standpoint too? This is a year that the Aggies are expected to compete for a conference title, for a division title. To have a veteran like Anthony Hines around, to have a veteran like Jamon Osmond around would be really helpful for this team based on what these guys have been through. I know there might be more talented guys behind them, but to have that kind of experience and some leadership would have really helped this team toward a title this year, and they're gone. So just saying that, you know, from a team standpoint, again, I would say that Jimbo and the players said some nicer things than maybe I would have in that situation.
You have to, and I'm just going to play the other side for you, Olin, just for the fun of the podcast. You have to, there's something to be said about the fact that when things like anxiety and depression usually set in right at the age of 20 to 25 is when some of these issues kind of fall into place in males. And you factor in the pandemic, you factor in all these uncertainty, when something like anxiety, depression, who knows what, and I'm not saying that this is involved with any of those players directly, but just talking in generally speaking, that the first time you start going through some stuff, it's scary. You don't know what is necessarily going on, and you have to kind of take a step back to kind of figure out how to work through it and then incorporate your life and live through it. So if that's something that someone is going through, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I think that you can still have to take step back to kind of figure out how to live your life successfully, and then also then in the future incorporate the rest of your life. And if someone's going through that, I think you can learn again to be mentally tough and maybe take a year to step back.
It's important to do also say that we don't know if Anthony Hines or Jamon Osmond are going through anything mentally, right. mental health situation. It's just that Mond mentioned that in relation to Osmond, and Buddy mentioned that in relation to Anthony Hines. At the same time, that's what's so fascinating about COVID and football and everything that's going on right now, is because that was a huge pushback when the Big Ten, the Pac-12 too, if they don't play, if you take away these players' identity, will that impact negatively their mental health state too? If they need football, let's let them play. And now, but some people need to get away from football to help their mental state. I mean, it's a fascinating topic, mental health as it pertains to the sport of football, especially in the current climate, Mike, don't you think?
Yeah, everyone's situation is different, and that's why I think it's so hard to generalize any of – whether it's Osmond's opt-out, Hines' opt-out. Like, it's two totally separate situations that just both happen to be former football players for Texas A&M. And 2020 has been the weirdest year I know I've experienced. Owen's a little older than me. Brent might be, like, 6 months older than me. I bet you it's the weirdest year they've ever experienced, too. And in this current climate where almost nothing makes sense, this feels pretty natural and normal for the inconsistency we've seen from March 11th when COVID officially hit the sports world until pretty much today. I have a hard time speaking on mental health issues because I think my head's in a pretty good spot and I can't put myself in their shoes, and I don't want to speculate or guess what they're going through and be wrong and have people hear me and think I actually know what I'm talking about. So that's kind
of
why.
I'm sure I'm speaking out of ignorance. I mean, we understand I come from a generation where emotional support dogs were not a thing. So if it's a lot of it comes off as being seems soft to me, you know, maybe it's just I'm a product of my time.
Me too. And let me say that life does not get any easier as you get older. You've got to learn to deal with adversity from an early stage, or otherwise you'll quit on things the rest of your life as well. And I'm not talking specifically about these football players. I'm just saying life is not an easy thing for anybody. It's tough on everyone. So,
well, I tell you what, some by his own doing, some not, but life's not been easy for the quarterback, Kellen Mond, especially when it comes to his Q rating among his own fan base. But I tell you what, you can get a whole lot of people back when you make comments like you did yesterday, hadn't even thought about opting out. You can also get a whole lot of people back if you go kick some butt as a senior in the SEC West. Kellen Mond's certainly got an opportunity to quiet the detractors, Olin.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if Kellen Mond will ever be a beloved quarterback here. Of course, I don't know that there have been many. I feel like Bucky Richardson, and since then maybe Johnny. Definitely Johnny. Nobody else, though, that I think you look at and they say, man, they were really beloved among the fan base. But if Kellen was ever going to be accepted that way and embraced that way, it's going to require a great season. And that raises the question is, can he have a great season? And what does a great season look like? To me, statistically, it's just you improve on your rushing yards, passing yards, touchdowns, and most importantly, wins while reducing your turnovers. If you do that and A&M wins a championship, or at least, you know, is a serious contender for one, that's not going to happen without Kellen Mond having a big year. And if he has that big year, maybe that's going to change the way Kellen is viewed and embraced by his own fan base. I think, you know, I think we can all agree that he's been a polarizing figure, whether it's because of on-field mistakes or off-field political statements or whatever. But I think we can also agree he's been a good quarterback, but not a great one. And we can probably all disagree and debate on whether or not he can be a great quarterback. I don't know.
I think
it comes back to the
idea that, as these players will tell you, football is the ultimate team sport. And the idea is to win a title. You win a title, you're beloved. Just like Bucky Richardson won titles. You know, if Bucky had played on a mediocre team and been a great guy and good quarterback, he would have been
Brandon Stewart.
What's that?
But is Brandon Stewart beloved?
Yes, or Gary Kubiak is another example. Here's a guy who went on to fame but wasn't really, you know, beloved.
And Stewart won a championship, did he not?
Well,
yeah. Or backup quarterback.
Or McCown, either one of them.
Yeah, McCown was the starter that year. Okay. Stewart came in for an injured McCown.
But I wouldn't think of either one of those being really beloved by the
McCown. I mean, I would say McCown was because of the 98 title, but that was just a one-year type deal. And of course, they won the South in 97 as well. But I'm just saying, it's all about titles. If Kellen leads this team to a title, he's going to be beloved in Aggieland for the rest of his life.
Well, it's 22 years since he won a ring of any kind.
Johnny Manziel's team finished third in the SEC West, but he was a lot of fun to watch, and he won the Heisman Trophy. So he's beloved. Yeah.
Is Kevin
and fifth in the country?
Would you say Kevin Murray is a beloved quarterback at A&M?
Was. I don't think is anymore. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's really odd the way, again, the polarizing figure that Kellen is. And I just really wonder if he has the kind of season that Aggies hopes he had. And Jimbo Fisher seems to hint that he might have. How much is that going to change the way he's perceived by his own fan base?
Today's society is so much of a what have you done for me recently society that if Kellen goes out and balls and has this monster season like we expect, I think a lot of the people who have been against him for a number of different reasons will be on number 11 side moving forward. All can be forgotten, like Brent said, with wins and touchdown passes. All can be forgotten. So if Kellen goes out and balls, I think he'll leave Aggieland as a pretty beloved figure if the season goes like a lot of us think it can.
See, Mike, and I agree with one part of that, and it goes back to what Brent said. It's more about the wins, because Kellen Mond could leave A&M holding most of the passing records for quarterbacks and not be a beloved quarterback. He can go out and throw touchdowns and throw yards, but if they don't win, he could be a guy that they try to forget about pretty quickly, and yet he's at the top of the list of all of the passing records, which is just a weird dichotomy. It's so 2020 that a guy could come in and literally rewrite the record book for A&M's passing. And granted, I know a lot of that's just longevity. There hasn't been a whole ton of four-year starters at quarterback at A&M in this kind of system, but still, you know, he's going to force people to remember him every time that they open up a record book if he wins or doesn't win.
Yeah, most beloved quarterback since Brandon Stewart. Brandon Stewart, because he was a backup and won a championship. Hubenak, Calzada, King, and Nick Starkel. So those are your most beloved. They love the backup here and everywhere else. Mike, backup two guard. Travis, backup catcher, both in college. So I think they could relate to it. Now, with both you guys, and we'll start with you, Travis, both you got running back topics you want to present. And I tell you what, make life easier on Kellen Mond to get the ball out to number zero, Anaya Smith, who just changed his number. They opened up the NCAA line to use number zero. Anaya Smith, huge key piece to what's happening offensively this year.
No player, I think, on A&M's roster fascinates me more than Anaya Smith. And it's not necessarily for the obvious reasons, just of what he's been able to do on the field. His family, his background, where he came from. I've gotten to talk to both his parents. They're really cool, interesting people. But the really fun thing is to hear about how Jimbo talks about how he was recruited and what his role was going to be, how Anias talks about how he was recruited and how his role was going to be, and how his dad talks about how he was recruited and how what his role was going to be. You know, Jimbo just said he was this great athlete. He's going to come in. You know, he's been a little bit more vague about that. Anias, you'll talk about the fact that actually the reason he picked A&M was for the engineering school, because he thought he was going to be going to Duke for the longest time. And he thought he was going to be coming in and playing wide receiver. According to several of them, Jimbo thought he was come in and eventually get moved to running back. And what his dad said, and I feel like this is the most interesting thing, and this probably encapsulates all of them, is that Jimbo Fisher said he wants to bring him in. He always has a guy on his team who's the mismatch guy, who's the guy that basically that guy that in layman's terms kind of is, we need to get him the ball. So it might be that he's in the backfield. It might be that they motion him out wide. It might be that he lines up in the slot. It just put him somewhere on the field where he's a mismatch, and that's going to open things up for the team. I think when you lose Jamon Osmond, and I think when some guys like Devin Achane just showing up that he can actually produce, you might start to see Anaya Smith maybe not necessarily be the change of pace running back like it seems like everyone has said he's going to be, but he might be a guy that you'll have to look before every play to see, okay, where's Anaya? Is he in the backfield? Is he out wide? Is he in the slot? You know, is he lined up at tight end? Who knows? As long as he can get a mismatch, I think we'll start to see a little bit more than that, than maybe the just carrying the ball running back situation like we've heard because of some of the attrition of the team.
Let's go around the horn on Anais. What do you guys expect from Anais as a sophomore?
I think you got to expect big things with how much everyone's talked him up this offseason, how Jimbo pretty much has said, we want to get the ball in his hands as often as we can. And if that Texas Bowl was any sample size of what we're going to see for a prolonged season, I love the creativity that Aggie offense showed in getting him the ball, whether it be the triple option, the jet sweeps. They tried to use him in the passing game. Kellen actually missed him on a little, I don't know what you even call it, route, little corner route out the backfield. I think it was the second quarter, but he was wide open. Kellen didn't make the greatest of throws, and Anais couldn't get it. But they're going to get the ball in his hands, and as we saw last year, when he has the ball, he's tough to bring down for a little guy. And those yards after catch can turn a 5-yard catch into a 20-yard gain, and he might be, outside of Demas, their best big play threat, even though he's 5'9", 180, 5'10", 180.
That's what they used to say about Mike Lucas back in high school, tough to bring down for a little guy. And now I will say this about Anais. I mean, he's not a miracle worker. I think people need to be careful about putting too much on him as a true sophomore as well. I think he's going to be a good, versatile player for the Aggies, but I'm not sure that it's just going to be – he's going to be a game breaker from day one. Now, selfishly, personally, I think we all want to see him do that based on his interviews and the fact that he will actually offer up a touchdown dance during a media session. And I'm hoping the guys don't get – hey, you know, they're going to – Anais, tone it down. I hope they don't do that to him because I love his spirit. I love his personality and obviously the way he plays football as well.
Yeah, he's the Swiss Army knife of that offense. You can do all kinds of things with him, and they will. I think he's going to be extremely productive. I would, think he's going to make a lot of touchdowns, a lot of big plays. But I'm kind of with Brent there. I think there's this tendency to try to expect maybe greater things than are fair for the guy. As a first-time starter, and quite frankly, as a backup running back. So do I think he's going to play a lot? Yes, I do. Is he going to get a lot of carries and catches? Yeah, but I do think we need to pump the brakes just a little bit on how much to expect from him.
How high are you guys on Isaiah Spiller as a sophomore after what we saw, especially middle of last year and then down the stretch? He's the only guy that showed up at all in the LSU game. What do you guys think of Spiller as a sophomore?
I think he's a 1,000-yard back, and yes, I'm aware it's a 10-game all SEC schedule with a bowl game, but I think he's a 1,000-yard back. You can say, yeah, he had a lot of yards against the nobodies on the schedule last year, but he also had like 67 yards combined in 5 games against some of the defenses that you don't face this year. Mike is right. He does have a better offensive line. I think if A&M has more of a deep threat in the passing game, that'll loosen up some of that defense too. And I just think that he's going to be better because you're usually better as a sophomore than you are as a freshman.
I think the key to so many things about this offense this season is he'll be as good as the offensive line lets him be. I think if they show the improvement, and I think they will be improved, like Mike and Olin said, but if it's the same offensive line as last year against these defenses, I don't know, but I think he has every bit of the making to be exactly what Olin said. And that's mostly what I expect from him. Another interesting combination is kind of going back to my subject is split back set that Jimbo has been known to throw out there. And he did it a little bit in the Texas Bowl. You get Anais coming out on wheel routes and coming out of the backfield, that might pull a linebacker, and that opens up some more room in the middle to run up the middle. That adds another little wrinkle. I think he's going to be a very good back this year.
Brent, you think Anais or Spiller will be more productive with the totality of the offense, total offense, things like that?
I think it's probably, I'm going to go ahead and say Isaiah Spiller based on what he did last year, you know, just saying from what I've seen on the field. And I will say this, when Spiller got up there in front of us, much more soft-spoken than Anais, but I loved how, I think it was Justin Woodard who asked, or somebody did, about yards after catch. And I love the quote where he said, well, anybody can run for 6 yards behind a block, but it says yards after contact. Anyway, I was sitting there thinking, no, Isaiah, not anybody can run for 6 yards behind a block. So anyway, he was a pretty good quote too. So I look forward to him getting in front of the microphone as well. And to answer your question, I think it's going to be Isaiah, but I think we're both going to be productive in this offense.
Very good. All right, Brent, we'll stick with you then. And we're real offense heavy here. Must be Vandy week. We've gone 30-something minutes and haven't talked about the Commodores yet. But with Connor Blumrick, this guy's moved all over the offense. Take us through that, Brent.
Yeah, I expect we'll see him against Vanderbilt. No, I threw out the topic of Connor Blumrick because, as we've talked about, the NCAA has made it so easy for guys, just if they're unhappy, to pack their bags, to leave where they are. This is a guy who very much, you know, pro-style quarterback who could have left after 1 year, after 2 years at Texas A&M, gone on to somewhere, been a starter at a smaller college or maybe at a mid-sized college, something like that. But a guy who has stuck it out. And you talk about, you know, kind of the ultimate team player. A guy here who's this tall, rangy quarterback who they put at running back, who's the most gangly running back I've ever seen. With all proper respect, did not look like a good fit at running back. Certainly looks like, to me, a good fit at tight end, because as his dad has reminded me through the years via Twitter, Connor Blumaker is a good athlete. And, you know, you could use him at tight end with the injuries that they've had to Baylor Cup and Blake Smith. So it's a little bit to celebrate the, as I said, the semi-greatness of Connor Blumrick, the fact that he has stuck it out at Texas A&M when many would have expected him to leave. I think it really says something about him and his – toughness, resiliency, however you want to say it.
When Ole Miss last year, when the rumors started kind of floating around that he might be changing to running back, changing to tight end, and all, he started the warmups, throwing some passes, then he moved out to one of the wide receivers lines, and he was catching one-hand catches down the line and showing he's a good athlete. I covered him, watched him when he was at State 7-on-7 here, and he was zooming around the field, and that was right after he had recovered from a knee injury. Back in high school. I think that anybody, and Jimbo made the great point of, if you're a quarterback, you know all the routes, you know all the route trees and the assignments and what's going on. And so if he can step up and be a little bit of a force on the blocking, I mean, I think he could be a definite rotation option to get some fresh legs in there and show his athleticism. So yeah, hats off to him taking what was given to him and making the most of everything.
Well, Mike, really cool story.
If that's not an humble brag, if I've ever heard one, I covered Connor Blumrick in 7-on-7.
Yeah.
Tournament. Boy, howdy.
You can see it on the Eagle.
Can I just say real quick, Gabe, is there a more interesting tight end room in the country than A&M's with Connor Blumrick, the quarterback turned running back turned tight end, Max Wright, the defensive end turned tight end, and then Ryan Rennick, the fullback turned tight end, along with Jalen Wattemeyer, who was an under-recruited tight end coming out of high school, who obviously has flourished into one of the best in the entire country.
Yeah. I don't think there's a more interesting player on A&M's team than Max Wright with that mustache and the neck roll and
it's awesome,
just going straight 1980s linebacker.
He may be a little faster than you think, too. It's fascinating to see what they do to fill out that position, how much they go to tights and how they use those guys. Bunch of different guys with different skill sets, but by and large, outside of Wiedemeyer, guys that hadn't done a whole lot in college yet. So we'll see about that. Hey, I'll throw out a defensive topic because I think we need to do it. I'm bullish on the defense, even without Hines and Elijah Blades. I think this has a chance to be the best defense A&M's had. You go back since the end of the R.C. Slocum era. I firmly believe this defense has a chance to be extremely good. We hit some of the concerns last week. They've got to get a four-man pass rush. They've got to get better around the edge. They've got to cover better. Talent, though, they're recruiting talent. Guys, you can roll in there and get a real two deep at all three levels. There are concerns. Everybody's got concerns right now, but I'm very high on the defense. You guys agree or disagree?
I think there's some definite potential there. I think, and the thing that really interests me the most, and call this a homer pick, is when we look at that depth chart, you got Caldwell's own Devin Morris lining up at starting at nickel. And we've seen in years past that nickel position can be a really, really big one and kind of launch some guys as it has in years past. Devin Morris came out, and in his few 5 or 6 or 7 times he saw the field in that special third down kind of nickel package, really did some good things. And so, yeah, I think to kind of answer your question, I think this is going to be a defense that really steps it up. But like, I'm really excited to see what Devin Morris can do in that position, because he has the skill set and the body type that you really think of a true nickelback, because he's bulked up a little bit. And I think that could be a really exciting player to watch in that system.
Gabe, you threw out the end of the RC era, but I would take it back. They should be really happy if they were as good as what they were in 2012 with Mark Snyder playing about, 13 guys, very few injuries. That was a pretty salty defense. So if they can mimic that first year in the SEC, I think they should be really happy on that side of the ball.
I think they'll be a lot better than that 2012 defense. I'll freely admit I'm wrong if I am.
I'm with Gabe on that. I do think they'll be better than that. I think they're going to be better in the defensive line if Clemens or whoever comes along on that opposite defensive end to DeMarvin Leal. Then I think the defensive line is going to be exceptional. I like Buddy Johnson as a middle linebacker, probably better than Stewart was. The questions to me is going to come down to the corners, and you know, we're here. Miles Jones is really, you know, making significant progress, that he's a much better player than he's been. And Jalen Jones is going to step in as a freshman and play like a senior and all those things. And that all might be the case. But at that position in particular, I have to see it because I haven't seen it in a while. That said, it may not be as much a threat or as much a problem this year, because you show me the gunslinging quarterback that you're really scared of, that's gonna challenge and beat your cornerbacks on a consistent basis. I don't know that I see one. Trask, Mac Jones, maybe. I don't know.
A defensive back's best friend is a good pass rush, and I really think A&M's defensive line has a chance to be as good as almost any in the entire country. I just remember my Giants back in 2007, 2011, destroying Tom Brady without blitzing virtually at all in the Super Bowl, and that kind of slowed down the 17-0, 18-0 Patriots. If they can get that 4-man pass rush, I know it's a lot easier said than done. Clemens has to step up. Leal, we all think, is going to be a stud, and then get some inside pressure from Bobby Brown, Jaden Peavy, and those guys. It'll allow Elko to get creative on the back end in coverage, and I think that's the key more than anything else. Can they get pressure with just that front four?
Well, and with talking about those defensive backs, how much fun is that trip to Starkville going to be to see what Mike Leach is going to bring to the SEC? And is it KJ Costello, the transfer quarterback? That's a game that I have circled that's going to be interesting for pretty much any team in the SEC, especially a team like A&M, who we'll have to see what the cornerbacks look like.
Well, especially when you consider the last time you were in Starkville, they lost that game because of the big plays they gave up on third and long. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say this. Historically, as good as Leach is, historically his teams have struggled in his first year. I don't know if that'll still be the same. Hope so.
Yeah, Kylin Hill had 1,300 yards last year. Leach has never had a 1,000-yard rusher. Hill had 800-yard games last year. Leach had a running back have a 100-yard game only 8 times in his entirety at Wazoo. I mean, it's wild. How's he going to use maybe the best running back in the league? You know, he'll get some touches, but is he going to carry the mail a lot? We'll find out. Let's close with this.
I don't know about you guys, but, man, I'm just focused on 1 week at a time, which is why I'm focused on the Aggies trip to Alabama.
All right, so let's close real quick around. What do you need to see against Vanderbilt? Maybe one player you're looking for, and what do you need to see in this game? Probably a win, but what are you looking for in this one before that trip to Bama, guys? Mike?
The wide receivers. I mean, that's the most unproven unit on this team, and Kellen, the senior quarterback. We got to see who can play, who can't play, and who he has that rapport with. early on before they play their toughest test of the season, Alabama in week two.
I'd like to see who all is available to play. I think that's going to be the question mark between any team, any game, whenever. I mean, Jimbo has said that they've done really well with the COVID and everything like that. But as we've seen with games, we all show up and all of a sudden, you know, you're the third string, whatever position is playing, and you have to assume that it's COVID. So I'm curious to see who shows up, what semblance of teams that they have at the game, and then also the offensive line. I think that's going to be the make or break of the season this year.
That's my main one. I was going to say cohesion and strength on the offensive line, because I really do believe the heat is on Josh Henson in his second year, because they did not look good last year.
I agree. Last year, remember the first game, they couldn't push Texas State off the line. I think they had a first and goal from the one. It took them three plays. And even then you're saying, well, gosh, if they can't overpower Texas State, you know, that's a red flag for the rest of the season. It turned out to be the case. Vanderbilt, if your offensive line can't go out and control the line of scrimmage against Vanderbilt, it's a huge red flag of what's, you know, for the rest of the season. So to me, the other places, you are just so much better than them. You should be, even at receiver against their DBs, that I expect the receivers to have at least a certain amount of success. But I've got to see it from the offensive line, because we've seen these same guys struggle against lesser programs.
Well, one more thing to add, that we just might be the only time we have to talk about this season, is punting for A&M got them out of so many jams the last 2 years. Bringing in a new guy this year, every indication is that it's not going to fall off, but it'll be interesting to see how much you miss a guy who sets NCAA records and wins Ray Guy Awards for the next guy up. It's not a not an envious position to be in.
Constantino could be amazing and it would still drop off. So, yeah. But Travis making a good point earlier. Hey, look, the media outlet that controls COVID the best without any absences is the media outlet that's going to win the Aggie beat. And we'll give that award away at the end of the season on Press Row. Who can stay the healthiest among the media guys?
Really, really be a training room warriors.
I'm just still upset y'all disrespected my guy Spencer Neely and the boys from 2012. But
we like all those guys. I think
there'll
be more
that
depth,
Louisiana Tech game.
Yeah.
No, and don't bring facts into it.
All right, guys, good stuff. You can find us at techsax.com/podcasts or iTunes or however you access podcasts. It's Press Row, Episode 2, A&M Vandy, 6:30 Saturday from Kyle Field. We'll be back to break that down and, more importantly, look ahead to the Aggies and the Crimson Tide of Alabama on the road a week from Saturday, CBS. Boy, we got a lot to talk about next week. But enjoy the game, and we'll be back next week on Press Row, techsax.com.